Ladies and gentlemen, Pop Culture Ninja back in the house. It's Nathan and Nathan again. How you doing, Nathan?
I'm doing great. Really excited for tonight's episode.
Yeah. Super stoked. We're going to be talking all about our TV shows that we are encouraging people to get caught up on, things that we want to see that's coming out. So this is kind of in place of when we did our summer preview. We weren't able to really get out and do TV episodes, and we said we were going to dedicate an entire episode to that, and so here we are.
Which turns out to be a good idea because there's a lot to cover. So yeah, I think in a lot of ways this is going to be sort of our summer preview episode. We're going to continue, hopefully, to do reviews of TV shows and whatnot as we go forward. But really, tonight, we're going to look at a couple things, one of them being a few shows that are already starting to get underway, some shows that have just finished, because we're really, this last week or so of May is usually when anything that hasn't already, the year-round shows, they're usually finishing up with their finales this week. And so there's been a lot of that's closing. So things that are available on streaming that you can check out. And we're going to talk about some of the shows that are coming up this summer. Not so much returning shows, but like new stuff.
No, I'm super excited about it. Just want to mention real quick, we do have the winners for our iTunes reviews. We got 12 of them that have actually posted that we can see, and so we're going to announce those at the end of the episode. It says there are 14 on there. So what I'm hoping is that by the end of the episode, we'll be able to look at those and read those, and those other two that are there would have posted by that point. But, you know, we'll see. So we'll announce the winners at the end. But yeah, let's go ahead and dive right in, man. First and foremost, we started off our Pop Culture Ninja series by talking about two superhero movies that were out. We were talking about Batman vs. Superman and Captain America Civil War. But really, there's been no shortage of superhero movies on television as well. And we're gonna kind of span those and talk about all those. We have The Flash, we have The Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl, and I'm missing one.
Well, you have on television, actually, network television, you also have Gotham, which one can argue whether it's actually a superhero show or merely kind of taking place in that universe and jumping off of the Batman, because Batman is a child in that show. You also have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I believe is still on. You had Agent Carter, which was just canceled, but there have been two seasons of that. Those were all Marvel-related tie-ins to the Marvel Universe. And then, of course, on Netflix, you have Daredevil and Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones, Yeah, so we're going to kind of highlight just some of those main ones. Now, I think, Nathan, you and I would both agree that Flash is probably the best one out there. And so I think we should save that one for last and talk about why we think that's kind of the best one out there. But let's kind of hit through them. I think right now, in my opinion, Arrow is probably on the lower end. You know, I feel like they've started going the route that CW often gets caught up in, and that, like, you know, cheesy romance junk.
It's tricky with CW because, to be fair, Arrow was it wasn't the first. We had Smallville. We had all 10 seasons of Smallville. But once, and Smallville, and people may not even be aware of this, but for everyone who looks at Batman versus Superman trying and straining as hard as it could to get all of the Justice League involved, Superman or Smallville, even though it took a very long time to develop Superman, we really didn't even get him in his costume until the last 30 seconds of the show. Big spoiler there. But in that show, they did bring in all the Justice
League. They did.
They brought in Martian Manhunter. They brought in The Flash. They even brought in Aquaman. They brought them all together, and they did something with them. They all even brought in Darkseid into the show. So when they did all of this, it ended up being not quite Justice League, not quite Superman, but they had kind of whet their appetite for that. And so we had a year or so, I believe, maybe less, between when Smallville ended, which I think was like 2011 maybe, end of 2010 or 2011, Smallville ends, and then what you get after that is Arrow comes in, and he's a different Arrow. Stephen Amell's different than the one who was on Smallville.
Just
a little darker. It has a more of a Batman sort of feel to the Green Arrow. I think it was a good show, particularly in the beginning. I'm not saying it's a bad show now, but one of the things that was cool about Arrow was that it used an interesting device to give his backstory at the same time it developed him as a character. Instead of being purely an origin story, it was like origin story, and yet he is also the Green Arrow right now, and there was a storyline on the island that had some mystery. As they move forward with that, I feel like they've had so many characters to juggle, they have so many different pieces of drama that in an effort to keep having things happen on the island, which is a past storyline, it's harder to keep interest there. That storyline keeps taking away precedent from what's happening in the here and now on Arrow.
Yep.
Arrow spawned the Flash. But I feel like the Flash, and again, like you say, we'll talk about that, Flash took of some of what Arrow did and sort of moved on with it. Arrow seems to be kind of still rehashing a lot of things. It can't decide if it wants to have that kind of joyful, exuberant superhero tone, or that sort of more dour, more downbeat element that has really crept into superhero stuff in general.
Yeah, yeah. Legends of Tomorrow is the most recent one that's come out. Thoughts on that? I haven't seen Legends of Tomorrow. I've heard so many mixed reviews on it, and but the majority of them have been pretty down on it. Your thoughts?
So I've seen maybe the first five or six episodes, and the reason I haven't seen the rest is not because I don't want to, but just, you know, with everything going on, trying to keep up with it. Legends of Tomorrow started just recently, like I think around January, so it is newer. It was sort of a season replacement show, and it was an effort to create that sort of team experience that Marvel did with the Avengers, but do it on a TV level, both budget and both with time constraints are different. Like, yes, they have a much more time to explore things, but in an hour framework, they can't necessarily build up to the bombast the same way that the Marvel Avengers movie could.
Yeah.
That being said, I do enjoy it to a degree. I think it's harder for them at this point, particularly with the first season, to be a real story where you get good chances for all the characters to come to the light. Mm. They're bringing one of the most entertaining things about the Legends of Tomorrow is that it has Wentworth Miller and Dominique Purcell, which came from The Flash, matched up as two criminals, Captain Cold and the Heatwave,
yeah,
I think.
Heatwave, yep.
And both of those characters, they were actual comic characters from The Flash, but then Wentworth Miller and Dominique Purcell are the stars of Prison Break. So in a way, it was almost like and they're about to bring Prison Break back, but it was a Prison Break reunion of sorts. They're some of the most fun characters on Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of interesting things going on. I would say it's definitely a secondary show. If you think of the DC and CW shows as comic books, Legends of Tomorrow has all the feel of a B title.
Sure.
A title that's there to support the main titles, to kind of give the opportunities for the main players to jump in and out once in a while. But it definitely, it isn't at this point given the same attention that I think those shows have.
Fair enough. Supergirl, thoughts on that? I saw the first three episodes of Supergirl, and I kind of bowed out of it, not because I wanted to. I felt like the first one was okay, and then I thought it kind of picked it up a little bit in the second one, and then the third one I thought brought something to it. So I thought like they were going somewhere, and then just overwhelmed with everything that's out there, and something had to go, and that was it. So thoughts on Supergirl and...
So I started watching Supergirl too, and one of the things that's been nice about Supergirl and The Flash is, even though we don't necessarily regularly sit down and watch them with the kids, they are shows that, with having younger kids, they can kind of be in the room for both Supergirl and The Flash, and there's never anything really too dark or too scary going on that's going to really cause a problem for them. A lot of times they'll be just milling around the background. They don't usually sit down and watch, you know, the show. But that's not necessarily true of shows like Arrow or Legends of Tomorrow, which I find are a little bit more intense.
Mm-hmm.
So Supergirl does retain that element. I wouldn't call it a kid's show, but it is a show that's maybe a little more family-friendly.
Sure.
In both the depictions of the levels of violence, the relationships that happen on the show, it definitely downplays a lot of more mature elements, while not being a juvenile show, which is nice. It's nice because I wouldn't characterize Supergirl as sort of like the young adult teen version of Superman. There's a lot of stuff there. If you look at Arrow as sort of being, to date, at least the first few seasons, a closer sort of encapsulation of what people might want from a Batman TV show.
Yeah.
I think Supergirl has done an even better job of being what people might actually want from a Superman kind of TV show. The way that they handle who she is, her secret identity, and how she melds the two. There's a lot of good writing going on there. And I think that Supergirl probably lends a lot of what they're getting right on that show is lifted directly, is the same creators, from what they're getting right on The Flash. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that differentiates there's two things that I feel differentiate The Flash from, say, Arrow. One is the support team of The Flash is extremely well drawn as characters and as like a family unit. That was teased out in Arrow, but I think you like these people even more on The Flash. They are given more of their own things to do. They are not always in the orbit of Barry Allen. He sometimes is in their orbit. And Supergirl does that same thing, where the approaches to both The Flash and Supergirl really feel like ensemble approaches to a story, as opposed to, here's a show about a hero, and these are the guys he knows,
sure,
or these are the girls he knows. You know, so in that element, I think it's worked really well. The actress, Melissa Benoist, who plays Supergirl, is excellent. Like, she's great. And I think she has a lot of charm, just like Grant Gustin on The Flash has a lot of charm, brings a lot of energy. The other thing that I think is really good is both Supergirl and The Flash are pulling directly from classic Golden Age comic stories. They're going all the way back in the vault to some very old iterations of these characters and pulling out classic great stuff that we want to see. You know, there's a couple of Superman storylines that Supergirl has adapted and done her own way that have been really strong and really good. There's a storyline involving where Supergirl is in this scenario where she basically believes that she's back on Krypton and it never exploded, which is a classic Superman storyline. And they adapt that storyline almost wholesale, but they build it into the story in such a way that becomes fresh. So I won't go into too many spoilers, so hopefully we'll be seeing Supergirl Season 1 out available soon, because it ended even a little early in some of the other shows.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Super excited for that, and no pun intended there. But, you know, and what I'm looking forward to is just kind of getting back in and seeing some of these things. You know, again, so many things out there, just don't have the opportunity to see them all. So really looking forward to getting back into Supergirl and watching that from beginning to end. Daredevil, which I think is arguably probably the second strongest out there. Seasons 1 and 2 are on Netflix. It's a Netflix original movie. At some point, there's talks about doing tie-ins. Jessica Jones is also in there as well. I didn't think that one was as strong as Daredevil, but that's also a Netflix original you can check out. But I want to talk specifically about Daredevil. That one, I'll say right off the bat, Nathan, is not kid-friendly.
No, it's definitely an R-rated approach to the material. It definitely kind of takes its influences from the 90s versions of Daredevil, the character. But Daredevil is a character that works better darker, I believe. And it is important for his world to be dark.
Mm-hmm.
And the Netflix show, I don't think it's ever wallowing in darkness, but it creates a backdrop for these characters to really come to light as heroes. Flawed, broken heroes, but heroes.
Well, one of the things that I think Daredevil does really well that I felt was missing in the two previous Superman movies was, while the world around him is dark, he's still the beacon of light in that world. And we see that more coming out in season two than we did in season one, because in season one, he's struggling with his identity and who he's going to become and why he's going to be the type of vigilante he's going to be. But he's established himself in season two. And so what's great is the world is dark and it's bleak, it's depressing. And the people around him are dark. And there are times that he gets down, but there's always a sense that, hey, he is that beacon of light in there, and he's the one that's going to bring everyone around him up and bring the best out in them, which I feel like we were kind of missing in Superman.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. I think also they're able to play with more elements of his Catholic background and Catholic faith that were always tied elements to the character, but again, weren't things that really brought out until like the 90s, and Kevin Smith had a run on the character where he brought in the Catholic elements of Daredevil, who he is, and how those elements of guilt and redemption and grace play into what he is doing as this hero of Hell's Kitchen. And of course, season two brings in the Punisher and plays them off. And the Punisher has gotten a really poor sort of deal in the movies. I mean, we've had we've had more iterations of the Punisher than we've had of, I think, of maybe characters like the Hawk. We had Dolph Lundgren in a completely dumb sort of 80s action movie sort of thing. You had Thomas Jane, who did a really nice job of embodying the character to some degree, but the story that he was in and the way they handled him was a little off, I thought. Yeah. And then I think there was a Punisher Warzone movie, which I didn't actually ever see, but from all accounts is really not that good either. So we finally get this character who, you know, they really play up the fact that the Punisher in a lot of ways is not a hero. He is very much borderline psychopath. But they build that into who he is. It doesn't feel incidental the way Batman being a killer felt in Batman versus Superman. Who the Punisher is sort of resonates, I think, better in Daredevil.
Yeah, and I think it makes him a relatable character. You know, there are scenes throughout where the characters who are at one point condemning him for what he's doing get face to face with him and talk with him, and almost to the point where, I can't judge you for what you're doing. And, you know, they know he's wrong, but they don't want to sit there and say guilty.
And I think seeing that we're hearing now talks of the Punisher Netflix TV show, I'm really interested to see that, because I think Netflix will have that ability to make this an action-based show but explore the character of the Punisher, which I don't think has been done in any of the media representations of him outside of the comic books in terms of the films and everything.
Yeah. Just a quick side note here. I think if you have Netflix out there, I think any of the Netflix originals – or most of them, I should say. I won't say any because there are a couple that I'm thinking of. But most of the Netflix originals are actually – they're pretty decent. Netflix is doing a good job of creating its own little universe with inside its universe to really bring some quality entertainment to people.
I agree. And we even – as we get to the stuff coming out this summer, there's a couple shows that are actually Netflix originals that are coming out. And I'd agree. They definitely also acquire things as well that aren't, I think – exclusively made by them that have the word Netflix original. So some of that quality difference you're talking about, but you know, shows like House of Cards, there are other things out there. I don't watch Orange is the New Black really, but from what I understand, there's a lot of effort put into building these shows. It's something that quality wise would be the same thing you find on television, in some cases better. Yeah. And I love that idea of being able to just not necessarily binge watch it, but it's all right there. You can watch it as fast or not as fast as you like, and it's all at any point right there at your fingertips to kind of see. Yeah. And that's what I think maybe the experiences with Daredevil have been stronger, because it's like sitting down and reading 30 great issues of a comic book at whatever pace you want.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's awesome. So we're going to finish on The Flash. Again, there are so many superhero shows that we could talk about, and we could go back and get into Smallville. I will put a plug in for Smallville because I love Smallville. So I'm throwing that one on Nathan.
A groundbreaker show, really. I mean, it melded. I think it set the tone for almost everything that CW did afterwards.
I agree.
I mean, in really influential shows, obviously being Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Smallville.
Yes. Yep. Totally agree. And here's the thing. Is the acting phenomenal in Smallville? No, it's a teenage soap opera. I'm going to throw that right out there. But what you're getting is a really cool Clark Kent development story. As a young person, how does he develop? How do his powers come to light? How does he mature? How is he interacting with the people around him? And it builds up this great suspension. So by the time you get to season 10 and you only see him in a Superman suit for 30 seconds, you don't feel disappointed. You feel like, wow, they did a fantastic job of wrapping everything up and showing who Superman is and how he got to be that person.
And big shout out to John Glover from Baltimore, who was Lionel Luthor in that show. He was great.
And
Michael Rosenbaum as Lex Luthor was good too. I mean, he's no Jesse Eisenberg, but he was all right.
thank you that he is no Jesse Eisenberg. The Flash. Let's talk about that for a little bit. And I'll just throw that out there to everyone. I've seen all of season one, loved it, thought it was great. And then again, going into season two, started watching it. Life kind of got in the way and I had to back off. So I'm about
four or five.
I know, right? Come on. You know, it'd be great if somebody could just pay me to sit at home and watch all these things all day. Oh, wait, maybe that could happen.
keep moving.
So anyway, you know, what I really felt that Flash did well, particularly in season one, was it developed the curiosity for who this main villain is. You get an idea of, okay, we're seeing this person. This guy's the bad guy. We know right away that this man in yellow, this yellow blur, comes back and kills Barry Allen's mother. I'm not giving anything
away. Wait, Barry's mother is dead?
Very first episode, this is what happens. And we see a progression and a development of who is the Flash going to become? How does he become this? Why is he getting entangled with the man in yellow? Who is the man in yellow? And we begin to see all of these elements come out that I really feel like they took the full 24 episodes for you to see how all of these characters interact and intersect with one another and who they're becoming. Your thoughts?
So as we've been talking, it's so funny because as we started this podcast, I read comics when I was younger and I've watched the superhero movies, but superheroes aren't really like my thing. And I've noticed that in the irony being that we've talked about superheroes like almost every single episode, and there's such a pop culture thing right now. But I truly believe, this may be hyperbole, but it's not to me. I think The Flash, the TV show Flash, is the best superhero anything that we've gotten outside of the comics in a long time. Maybe, you know, it's probably my favorite, like, film, TV version of a superhero ever. And that's interesting because I was not really much a fan of The Flash growing up. I read the comics. I got an idea of who Barry Allen and Jay Garrick, the Silver Age, you know, the Golden Age, right, or whatever Flash is, and who they were. And there were some storylines that I enjoyed. But I'm like, he runs fast. You know, it's better than talking to fish like Aquaman. But he's still essentially, what can we do with this guy that runs fast? Which is a really downplaying of who the character was and all the stories we read. So The Flash is a character, I believe, that is easy to kind of discount, is easy to sort of dismiss, which isn't necessarily fair, and partly is because if you don't know the great wealth of stories and work that has been done on The Flash through the comic series, then you don't really know who The Flash is. And what this show did right from the outset, which was great, is really pull the essence of who this character was on the page, pull from some great classic stories, some great villains, and then merge them into their own thing. Because I think the superhero shows, to me, one of the problems is they ultimately still end up being about people in tights fighting each other.
Sure.
You know, certainly the TV shows have grown beyond that. But I think what is strong about The Flash is the same thing that was strong about Joss Whedon's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, is that this is really a coming-of-age story about a young man grappling with a lot of different, not just choices, but responsibilities and possibilities. And The Flash has powers that are beyond some of these other comic book characters. Like, we talk about Spider-Man with great, you know, power comes great responsibility. But The Flash has powers that can, in some ways, not just stop villains, but undo. You know, we start to get the idea that he can undo creation accidentally if he's not careful. So there are backlashes and downsides to his power. And he is a flawed, very flawed character at the same time that he's also a very upbeat character. Barry Allen wants to do the right thing, but he doesn't always know what that is. Yeah. And to surround him with characters that are also flawed, but also very caring, there's a family dynamic underneath of this that is very much what Joss Whedon had in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We had a character that sometimes it was hard to root for because she was being a messy, realistic human being.
Right.
And at the same time, there was always somebody on the sidelines of that character who was offering in a sort of loving, generous way the right path, whether or not the character takes it. So the story-wise and the character beats in The Flash are really what carried me through. You talk about the man in yellow and all that, and these stories are compelling, but I think it's that family base that happens, that surrogate family base. There are characters on the show, Caitlin and Cisco, and if you don't know those names now, you start watching the show, you will.
Right.
Joe West, what a great character, what a great job they've done with him as sort of Barry's surrogate dad. They do an awesome thing of bringing John Wesley Shipp in to play his father, who played The Flash on the old 90s show, which I enjoyed in a goofy, kind of clunky way. But that turned out not to be stunt casting. You know, what right. they've done with this character, and even when you finish season two, season two's awesome. Everyone get to it and get through it so we can talk about it.
Right.
But season two, they proved that that wasn't a stunt. There's still a purpose and a reason
yeah.
to what they've done. Tom Cavanaugh comes in and plays Dr. Harrison Wells, and what he has been put through story-wise and all the different variations he's gotten to play, a really fascinating character and a great underrated actor playing yes. a fascinating yes. character. So I think The Flash doesn't just bring back classic stories or pay them like lip service the way I thought Batman versus Superman was doing. It takes these stories and reminds us why they were good in the first place,
yes.
and we may have never experienced them, but what they're doing with The Flash, they capture this joy and this innocent charm that I relate to comic books,
yes.
reading them growing up, that is lacking in almost a good bit of what's out there. Even to me, Marvel sometimes gets bogged down in the storytelling. I walk out of The Flash or away from The Flash kind of just energized and
yeah.
ready, and you know, and sometimes even really touched in some of the dramatic beats that they have.
Yeah, no, I agree completely, and you know, so just want to tell people this was a longer section of our reviews because again, there are so many superhero TV shows out there, and like we said, Nathan, it's the pop thing that's going on right now. People are digging it, so we wanted to make it longer, but we do have a lot of other shows that we want to recommend to you, and we want to get you know, just kind of start putting in your heads whether you've seen them or not, so that you are familiar with them. So what I'd like to do now, Nathan, if you're cool with it, is just kind of go back and forth. So I'll talk about one that I'm really digging in and love, kind of why, and then just throw it over to you, and you go ahead and throw one out there. First one I want to talk about is The Blacklist. James Spader is fantastic. Now, I'll say off the bat, this, again, is not a show for children. So, you know, we have Daredevil, not a show for children. Flash, yeah, you could watch it with your children, and, you know, really have a good time with them and enjoy it. Blacklist, not a show like that. Basic summary, without giving anything away, you have a ex-Navy guy who's on the track for Admiral, kind of the best of the best, and he one day decides he's done, takes everything, and starts hiring himself out as a mercenary. Fast forward like 20 or so years later, and he walks himself into the FBI or the CIA, I forget which one, and he is now going to basically use the CIA to get everyone on the blacklist, everyone that they can't get. It happens to coincide that it's his list of people he wants to get rid of too. So
convenient.
I know, right? It works. But what I really find fascinating about this character, Reddington, that is, again, just done so well by James Spader, is he knows he's a bad guy. He knows he's not the hero. He knows he is going to do whatever it takes. And in one scene in one of the episodes, he's interacting with one of the characters. The character looks at him after he's just done this horrible thing and just basically says, "You're a monster." And he just kind of looks at her and says, "I know." There is no denying. He will do whatever he wants to do. He's not bound. And there is something that is appealing about that. The guy who's just confident in who he is and knows what he wants to do, knows how to get it done, and does it. And he just portrays that role so marvelously. So The Blacklist, you can get the first two seasons on Netflix right now. I think it's in its third season.
I believe so, right now, yeah.
Yep. So if you have not been watching that, check it out. Just, you know, at least go on and watch the first couple episodes. It's great.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a good... there are lots of things to like about it, but if you had nothing else, you have James Spader, who is, again, an actor who's really underrated, and
yeah.
you talk about playing a guy who realizes he's not the good guy. We are knee-deep in those sorts of characters
right.
these days, but Spader does a very convincing job of making this feel like a person,
yeah.
someone who is sometimes likable, who is sometimes not, but he's
right.
always relatable, not necessarily in the sense that, oh, I'm like him or I know someone like him, but you can see the same human weaknesses and
yeah.
strengths that emanate from him. He
yeah.
makes this a very believable character,
yes.
which is a
yes.
totally essential to that show because I don't think it would work without him.
I agree. I agree 100%. Nathan, show that you're kind of digging in or want people to be aware of?
So, yeah, in this segment, we're kind of talking about shows not that haven't aired yet, but are sort of available out there, and you can either get them through a streaming service or streaming that you might have to pay for. We try to limit it to the most part to stuff that's on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something like that. And you'll find a lot of what I've got to offer is science fiction, because that's sort of my bread and butter. And there was a time when science fiction was very dry on television, and we were in a sort of new renaissance. And to go back, the CW has a show on right now called The 100, not to be confused with The 4400, as we were talking earlier, which was a show previously back that was also a sci-fi show involving people sort of being taken away, mysteriously disappearing, and then coming back. The 100 is a different show. It's an interesting show because it is a futuristic show that plays like a medieval war drama in a lot of ways. And the reason for that is we've got another storyline where basically Earth is completely done. You know, we've wasted it. We are now in space, in a space station orbiting another planet. And our hopes of repopulating that planet are going to be basically based off of, can we get everybody off of this giant wheel that is running out of resources, and we're coming up against the wall on this. And so they end up sending 100 people down. They're all these sort of young juvenile delinquents who go down to the planet's surface and have to survive. There's still drama going up on the space station with coups and things like that and governmental issues. And they're tracking these young people that are now on the surface of this planet. This planet is, again, it's reminiscent of a almost like ancient medieval England, you know, and they encounter tribes that are living there and things like that. And it sounds very, you know, pat. We've been there. We've done that. We've seen these sorts of stories before. But again, the characterization, the writing, and the storytelling is very strong. Yeah. And they have a good reason, and they do a nice job of blending both that element of being a medieval storyline with a futuristic storyline. So I really I highly recommend it. It's already been on for 2 seasons. I didn't even quite realize that. I've followed the first two. I need to catch up on the third, which I believe just completed. But it's a really strong show, enjoyable. It's in the middle of what we talked about in terms of it's not a show for kids at all. It is not a necessarily harder show to the level that Daredevil is. But you're looking at that sort of young adult, age 13, 14.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the – and I haven't seen that one, which is kind of why I hadn't really weighed in on it. Next one that I really have enjoyed was Person of Interest. Joy and I, you know, I'm a big fan of Jim Caviezel. You know, and he's done more than just The Passion. Sometimes that's really, you know, all he's remembered for. But, you know, he was fantastic in the remake of The Count of Monte Cristo that came out, I think, back in 2001, 2002. Did a fantastic job playing Edmond Dantes. Did a great job in Bobby Jones' Stroke of Genius. Thought that was a really well-done movie.
I have to stop you. Have you seen Outlander?
Yes, okay. I have.
We need a special podcast for that.
I own that on Blu-ray.
As do I. For anyone who's now baffled, we're not talking about Outlander, the Starz series with the Scottish time traveling, but we're talking about a movie that Caviezel did in, I believe, 2009 or 2008, where he is...
It's Beowulf.
It is.
It's a Beowulf retelling.
He comes from another planet. His name is Kanan, interesting enough. He crash lands in a Viking era, and the alien creature kind of comes with him, ends up on the planet with him, and that sets up that Beowulf Grendel storyline. Yeah, we're going to come back to that at some point.
I completely agree. So stars Jim Caviezel, which he does a really nice job in this. Also stars Michael Emerson, who played in Lost.
Yes.
He was, and those guys have such great interaction together. And we start off knowing, it's almost from the point of view of Jim Caviezel a little bit, because we start off knowing much more about his character and the things that are going on. And we're trying to discover more about Michael Emerson and what's going on with him and his character and why all these things are happening. But we find out within the first episode that there is a machine out there that Michael Emerson has built that gives out a social security number. And that person is either in trouble or they are the person who is going to cause trouble. And so you get this
Minority Report light sort of.
Yeah, exactly. But you get this nice blend of action and intensity with kind of sleuth detective work, because they this has gotten them into trouble, because they almost always take a stance that, okay, we've got to work under the assumption that this person is in trouble because they could die at any moment. And so that's burned them a couple times, it turning out to be the person who's causing the trouble. So it's very interesting to watch their dynamic and to see Caviezel's almost the hired muscle, the one who's going in and stopping all of this. And Emerson is going in and he's doing the legwork, the background checks, and trying to figure out why these things are going on and how the pieces are all fitting together so that they can prevent whatever bad thing is going to happen. And their dynamic with one another is just, it's gold. And they end up bringing in a lot of characters that are supporting, and actually around season four, kind of bring a spotlight onto themselves. And so you really start to see a teamwork family dynamic happening where all of these people are working together to solve this, where in the first two seasons, it's really Caviezel and Emerson on their own. And so they do a good job at developing the story and the characters and really bringing them out and bringing them to life.
I think this is a really underrated show. Like, I know it's a show that people are a fan of and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it does have a fan base, and it's been on for several years now. And I'm really happy about that. I was concerned. Usually when they have an interesting show with interesting characters, it gets canceled before I can really get into it. So it's nice that Person of Interest has been around. It's nice too that you can get most of this now on, in fact, if you were to watch it right now, they're all the seasons. I think the first three or four seasons.
First four seasons are on Netflix.
Yep. And then the new season has just recently started. So if you were to feasibly catch up in the next few weeks, you could probably jump right in, catch up with a couple new episodes. But one of the things we've had, Lost came in, and Emerson was great on Lost too. Lost, I have mixed feelings about. But Lost was one of those shows that started to move forward the idea of shows being a long, continuous building story and mystery, when before a lot of shows have been very episodic.
Yes.
Person of Interest is a show that I feel does an excellent job of blending the episodic sort of mentality that people enjoy in things like CSI and whatnot, because it's not very challenging. You go, you watch an episode, it doesn't require a great commitment. You could watch any of those episodes out of whatever order, and you've got basic character dynamics are happening, but they're basically like a crime of the week sort of show.
Yeah.
Person of Interest is building this ongoing mystery and these relationships between these characters at the same time that it is, in a lot of ways, more episodic than shows like The Flash and some of the other shows we've spoken about. So it does a nice job, I think, of harkening back to a certain kind of show that we've moved away from while retaining that building story mechanism. And Emerson and Caviezel, one of the things about both of those guys, I think, that is really an underrated gift as far as acting goes, is they have the ability to both come off as very gentle, compassionate characters. At the same time, they can turn around and be very sinister and very cold.
Yes.
There's not a lot of actors that could do that. I mean, Caviezel could be a very warm presence. They could be a very questionable sort of creepy presence. And Emerson even doubly so.
Yes.
In fact, Emerson, I think, is more on the side of creepy, that when he reveals that sort of warmth and humanness, that it is disarming to us a little bit. And
no, definitely.
It was great to see him jump into something after Lost. They had talked about finding something for he and Terry O'Quinn to do together, which never quite came about. But I'm glad that he has this.
Yeah, and I mean, another show that really shows just how good Caviezel is, or a movie, I should say, Deja Vu. Did you ever see that with Denzel Washington?
I think I might have missed that, actually. I'm familiar with what it was, and the plot of the Tony Scott action film. Kind of, not time travel, but another thing, I think, where you're projecting into the future what's going to happen.
Yeah, and Caviezel plays the villain in that, and it's a really neat movie to just kind of see him. And like I said, I'm a big fan, so I could just sit here and talk about his movies. And I think he is, again, just an underrated actor that really brings a movie to life. You try to think about other people who could maybe fit in that role and do the things that he does, and no one really can come to mind.
And you mentioned the sleuth element of Person of Interest, which I think TV is a great sort of venue, I think, for the mystery. You know, we've had a lot of stuff of it. You know, Sherlock is big again, which is a good show in its own right. And there are other mystery sort of shows on television. There's a couple I wanted to highlight that you can go back and really watch all of them now because they're not on anymore. But I think they would make great sort of summer viewing. And one of those is Veronica Mars. Have you ever seen Veronica Mars?
I didn't. It was recommended to me, but I did not see it.
And I don't know that it's on Netflix. I believe it is still on Amazon, though. And there were three seasons of this show. This was quintessential sort of that CW or WB sort of show that they specialized in that was a very specifically teen show. Kristen Bell plays the daughter of a private eye who's caught up in the middle of a mystery involving her murdered friend from the summer before. It is unapologetically all teens, and they're all sort of like kind of preppy characters living in California. And yet it follows along, again, that Buffy the Vampire Slayer vein in which it develops these people in ways you don't expect. But what's really great is it takes the idea of the private eye, of the noir detective story, and really transplants it into this high school setting without losing any of the character dynamics you'd find in either show. Yeah. So it's very funny. It's very relatable in some ways. Mm-hmm. You follow these characters. And the mysteries, for the most part, are really pretty good. Mm. So the fact that it's able to balance both of these, it might sound completely, you know, if you're listening to this and your typical thing, like me, is science fiction or fantasy or right. anything that is not teen-related, I'd actually recommend giving Veronica Mars a shot because it's great. Kristen Bell's great as the lead, mm-hmm. and it's pretty strong every season. It's another show that has to develop with the character, so they start out later in high school, and they're in college by the time the show finishes up. So it does follow them. Again, if you liked Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I'd say this is comparable work. It's about on the same level.
Very cool. Just a quick nod and shout out to Firefly and Serenity. You mentioned just, you know, those cult classic shows that were on and then canceled. Firefly, Nathan Fillion was so great. And then they had the follow-up movie, I think it was like, what, 4 or 5 years later with Serenity, kind of closing things off and really, you know, trying to finish at least one major storyline that was prevalent throughout Firefly. So, you know, I know you can find both of those on Netflix right now at this point. So, you know, just had to give a nod to those two.
That's fine. It dovetails perfectly with the idea of shows that were canceled before their time.
Yes.
Because, and this is a show that I think in its time was very popular. It's popular again, and we're about to see it come back. But I suspect it's a show that maybe even particularly our listeners have not seen or maybe know of, but just haven't really taken the plunge with, which is Twin Peaks. And Twin Peaks is available on Netflix. This show is something that is still to this day, I think, a very hard show to explain exactly what it is. And if you've never seen an episode, you need to see more than one episode to really get it. It begins in this sort of logging town where a girl's been murdered, her body shows up, and she has relations and ties to everybody in this town, and it seems the FBI shows up, and you have Kyle MacLachlan stepping in, and it seems like this is going to go down a very predictable murder mystery route. The show comes out in like 1989, 1990, yep. and there's no reason to expect that this isn't going to be something maybe just a little bit edgier than Matlock. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
That initially you've got something, at that time shows like In the Heat of the Night and stuff like that are still on the air, and you have Twin Peaks show up. And it turns out to be completely weird, completely crazy, in such a way that it's hard to really even characterize it. This is a show that takes nosedives into dark comedy, into horror, into science fiction, into very bizarre elements, and there are lots of weird storylines going on all at the same time. It's created by David Lynch, who is known for making extremely strange movies. We could do an entire podcast on David Lynch and what the heck he's thinking at any given moment. But one of the awesome things about Twin Peaks is it forced Lynch to really kind of marry his extremely weird, surrealistic style and atmosphere with something that kind of looked a little bit maybe like a plot.
Yeah.
And he hit a lot of interesting notes. Have you seen it?
I remember watching it when I was younger, when it first came
Seeing
out.
Seeing it on television, being like, what is this?
Yeah.
I need to
and
like
especially,
you know,
in the mind of, what was I, 7, 8 years old at the time.
Yeah, that'll mess you up.
Yeah, so, you know, but I do remember I remember bits and pieces of those episodes at that time, images really.
Strange,
you know,
dwarf dancing in a red room with, like, slowed down music in the background.
Yes, actually, that was the exact image I was thinking of.
That's because it's a hard one to get out of your head. And I think that that's probably the experience that maybe a lot of people have. I remember seeing that. That was pretty weird. There was all this talk, who killed Laura Palmer?
Yeah.
Which is actually a mystery that is answered at the first season. And then the show continues for a second. And it didn't go any further than that. But it creates it was very groundbreaking. But in the nature of shows that are very groundbreaking, what tends to happen is they break ground, everybody copies them, and going back to them years later, they aren't as interesting because you recognize where you've seen all this before. Twin Peaks is not a show that suffers from that. It is still... You will see where other things came from it, but it's so uniquely its own that even if you don't like it, I think you owe it to yourself if you enjoy that science fiction fantasy sort of offbeat.
Yeah.
Start it and stick with it because it's a trip. And it and it's coming back next year, so whether that'll be good or not, this is the time to get caught up. 2 seasons, not a huge commitment.
Yeah. Very cool. I'm just going to turn it over to you for a little bit here, Nathan, because what I've got on the rest of my list, I think it will be good to kind of finish off our list before we talk about Preacher. We'll kind of do that at the end of this. But I think you've got a few more shows, and then I'll go into our family-friendly list at that point.
Oh, yes, because my list does not necessarily reflect family-friendly. I watch a lot of stuff with my kids that is very kid-friendly that I have no real interest in talking about on a podcast.
That's why he has me on here, because I will talk about it.
And I'll sit here very, 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 very quiet. Gravity Falls, I do want to talk about, because, again, we've got a nice dovetail between children's or family shows and Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't really think that there would be a dovetail there. But Gravity Falls was a show Alex Hirsch created. It's cartoon. It was on Disney XD, and it's actually over now. And unfortunately, at this current point, it's not on Netflix or Amazon Prime in terms of like where you can get it as part of the service. It is available on Amazon Instant Streaming, though. You can buy the seasons. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to think of a way to describe this, but if you took Twin Peaks, The X-Files, and The Simpsons and sort of and made it just a little more family-friendly, you'd have this show, which follows two kids, Dipper and Mabel. They're brother and sister. They're twins. They come to the town of Gravity Falls to spend time with their uncle. So Hirsch is kind of drawing on what it's like to go spend time with a relative in a weird town. But Gravity Falls is full of bizarre things, spaceships and lawn gnomes that live out in the woods and crazy characters. And a lot of them are voiced by people you know. In fact, Nathan Fillion is in the show as a character called, you know, the Northwest family, who's the big kind of snobs that live on the mansion on the top of the hill. But you've got all these strange characters and a building story where Dipper discovers these books that his grunkle, great uncle Stan has, who runs a like crappy tourist shop in the middle of the woods. Yeah. It's like the mystery shack, and the S is always falling off it. There's a lot of references. There's a lot of really weird, absurdist humor, but it does wrap around into a story and bringing in a lot of different voice actors. You sit there and you're like, wait, I know who that is, and I know who that is. And commendable to it is it lasted 2 seasons, and then it literally wrapped its story up. It most kids' movies, especially stuff that plays on Disney, you know, isn't really interested in telling a story. It's interested in being episodic. And this does. It's a beginning, a middle, end story. It does have that coming of age. At the same time, being extremely, extremely goofy. There's a point when they're fighting in the apocalypse and they have a giant robot that's made out of like frozen Tyrannosaurus arms and whatnot. You know, he's like, really? I've seen enough anime to know this will absolutely work. So a fun show. Definitely recommend it. It's not for very young, you know, really, really young kids, but I think it's one of those things you watch an episode or two, you kind of feel it out, and it's a nice sign. It's training wheels for that kind of geek-centric stuff that that you find later on, and it's hard to find that in a younger format, but I think Gravity Falls does it nicely.
Very cool. So kind of running into, you know, talking about Disney XD, and Disney, we have Phineas and Ferb.
That's a fun show.
It is.
And that's a show I can watch with Jonathan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dude, I'll sit there and watch that by myself. Forget having a little kid around. One of the writers and producers, voice actors on it, Jeff Swampy Marsh, his nickname is Swampy. He was actually interesting about him. He was one of the initial writers for The Family Guy, but he wanted to write something that was kid friendly, wanted to write something that was good and intelligent. Yeah. And so he comes up with this show, Phineas and Ferb. And if you guys have not seen it yet, it is great. I mean, the interaction between these two boys. When I was teaching, the show came out when I was in school teaching, and I'd always tell my students, this is what I want you to do over the summer. You know, I want you to be these two kids during the summertime. You know, forget I mean, these guys are – they're geniuses, and they're very inventive and creative. And the show is just it does well at pulling together this idea that these two kids have a short amount of time during summer break, and they're going to use it to live life to the fullest. And so they come up with all these crazy ideas and inventions and start implementing them and putting them into play. And so even when they're sitting there trying to think, they can't really think of anything. So they feel like they're going to have to spend the entire day inside playing video games. They're like, oh, why don't we just make an interactive video game that we can like literally beam ourselves into and become part of the video game? And they do it. And it's just – it is a wild, crazy mix of – humor and entertainment, and there's a cool family dynamic that goes on where the mother is completely oblivious to all of these things that are going on around her, and the father is like cheering the kids on and joining in with them. So one of those ones that I just totally recommend. Sit down with your kids and watch. It's great fun. Thoughts on it, Nathan?
Yeah, it is a fun show, and it is, again, one of the nice things about it is both kind of crazy and out there and imaginative and at points daring without being the feeling need to be edgy or sort of skirting that line between adult and kid. They don't even look at it in that way. They set out to make something in the vein of the old Looney Tunes and like the Chuck Jones cartoons, something that is just fun, that is sort of timelessly goofy. That it doesn't matter whether you're 10 years old or 50 years old. I mean, you know, there's the potential. What's funny about the show is probably in some ways universally funny. It's definitely a show for the younger set.
Yeah.
But it's not a show where they're like, okay, here's 5 jokes for the kids, here's 4 jokes for the adults.
Right.
This doesn't run that way. And that's what I like about it. And if Gravity Falls is Training Wheels or X-Files, Phineas and Ferb is Training Wheels or Gravity Falls. So you can build your way up here.
That's right. I would say, you know, really the next step up from that, you're looking at Animaniacs.
Oh, it's a classic.
It is. Netflix just came out with all seasons of Animaniacs on there, so you can go on and watch them. And one of the great things about this, very few people know this, but Steven Spielberg was actually the creator of it, producer. And
it really sprang from Tiny Toons, which he produced earlier, which was literally the Looney Tune characters as little kids.
Right. Well, actually, wasn't it?
It was takeoffs on them. You know, like, instead of like Tasmanian Devil, there was Dizzy Devil. Right. Babs and Buster Bunny were Bugs Bunny.
Yeah,
they were like their teachers, relatives or something.
Yeah, so the teachers were all the Looney Tunes characters, and these were like their nieces and nephews and all that crazy stuff. But yeah, Animaniacs is just this great it's a really great blend of humor for kids and adults. I think it does a good job at, you know, really, I've gone back and started rewatching some of those things. And there's a lot of things that as a kid, I was like, yeah, I totally miss that. But as an adult, I can totally look at it and appreciate some of the humor that's in it. I almost think of it as a pre-Pixar, where an adult could go in and really appreciate the humor that was in Pixar. It wasn't totally on a kid level, some of the jokes and things like that. But at the same time, you could appreciate the humor that was on the kids level, because it was intelligent.
There's a sense in the initial early Looney Tunes cartoons, the first Bugs Bunny cartoons, a really sense of really anarchy, for lack of a better sense, of just things run rampant because animation opened up all these doors and things happening at a crazy level that could never happen in live action, with the stories just sort of thrown to the wayside, which is probably where they differ from Pixar. Pixar, these things are very story-driven.
Right.
The beauty of Animaniacs is it's not tied to any story. It is just unfettered zaniness.
Yeah.
And it's refreshing because you don't see as much of that. One of the things I like about Animaniacs and Tiny Toons and shows of that nature, you go back and it's funny because you're like, oh, yeah, I remember the 90s now. There's a lot of dated jokes there. Clinton comes through playing a saxophone like every episode. But at the same time, they weren't afraid to really dig deep and have references to old Western movies or old characters. You know, one of the classic things that happens in a Looney Tunes cartoon is people come out looking like Humphrey Bogart and Peter Lorre, and most people don't even know what a Peter Lorre is these days. They know the creepy slobbering guy that says, "I want to do horrible things to you," but they don't know that this is supposed to be Peter Lorre, a great, you know, character actor. And Animaniacs coming out in the 90s on TV in the afternoon wasn't afraid to do these things. Right. And I'll throw another one out. It's on Netflix. It's not a TV show, but a movie. Looney Tunes Back in Action, which was the most recent a movie like Space Jam, except instead of being a giant 1.5-hour commercial, you know, it really it integrated characters in with the Looney Tunes. And it was directed by Joe Dante, who's done a lot of movies like that, Gremlins and Small Soldiers and Inner Space. And he makes Looney Tunes Back in Action has a lot of great callbacks to old. It remembers that there were people alive and watching television and movies before 1989, And so if your kids are into like the Animaniacs, Looney Tunes Back in Action, not a bad sort of follow-up.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got three more on my list, and then we'll get to Preacher. Another one that's kind of a fun one, my later years, and I mean within the past 2 or 3 years, have started hanging out with people who are big into games. And one of the games they enjoyed playing was Yu-Gi-Oh! And so I've kind of gotten involved in the series Yu-Gi-Oh! But this series that I'm going to talk about, it's called Huntic. It's 2 seasons, so really
animated?
It is. It's an animated one. But it's kind of an interesting one because they use it's based on these spells and these
– Spells. I think we're going to have to stop right there, Nathan.
I know. All right.
Sounds a little disturbing to me.
That's right. But I'm going to keep going here because it's me.
Right. I just talked about Twin Peaks. Fire that's away. Right.
So they use these spells to kind of enhance their powers and, you know, make them able to jump further and higher and things like that. But they also can call upon these things called titans. And these titans can come and defend them and protect them. They can also, you know, help do these things. They at some points can integrate with the titans. And the idea is they're trying to find these relics and collect as many relics as they can because the titans hold a neutral position. They're neither good nor bad until whoever takes them over projects their given light or darkness onto them. And so, you know, there's good organization and bad organization. But it was actually, I mean, it was really compelling to just kind of sit down and I binged watched it within 2 weeks, I think it was, and found myself really just enjoying it. The reason why I kind of bring up Yu-Gi-Oh! Is because it's created in that same vein. It's a deck building game and they made the cartoon to kind of fit around that, less well known than Yu-Gi-Oh, but still just as enjoyable to sit down and watch. It's got one of those, you know, theme songs like you would, you know, hear from the 80s or 90s.
Like you would hear at the very beginning of our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And it just sticks in your head and doesn't go away. And so to me, you know, it combines all of those elements of, hey, you know what, this kind of, it's not a throwback, but it reminds me of that type of thing. I could sit down on my couch on a Saturday morning with a bowl of cereal and watch it.
Which reminds me, Voltron is coming back to Netflix.
Yes. Yes.
So I saw that. Well, hopefully we'll have a chance to get to the new shows here shortly. But yeah, Voltron.
Absolutely. So the last two I have, Fuller House. For those
please repeat that. I kind of missed it.
Fuller House.
Fuller House.
That's right.
Okay. Here we go.
Here we go. For those of you who just enjoyed Full House, it was a fun Netflix original, 13 episodes. Sit down and watch. Now, my one complaint about it is that I felt like they jammed too many things into the season.
There was too much story in Fuller House?
No. I didn't say story. I said too many things. And what I mean by that is, you know, basically within the first episode, you see all the old characters and they jam all the old jokes into that one episode. Now, as the series goes on, they do a good job at kind of developing things and moving on, I feel like. But that first episode was a little rough at parts where it was just one old joke after another. And you know, Frank Miller kind of admits that, yeah.
Or Frank Miller?
Not Frank
Miller. Okay, we got to stop. I would Franklin. Like to see Frank Miller's Fuller House. I would probably end...
Everybody dies.
I was going to say, it's going to end with Bob Saget wearing Uncle Joey's face, which I'm not opposed to, really.
Not Jeff, no. Jeff Franklin. That's who okay. The creator, Jeff Franklin. Give me a second. Need to recover from that one. but he admits that
Dark Stamos returns.
that was a just a throwback. Like if we could have ended Full House, that's how we would have ended it. So you know, when you look at it within that context, it's not quite as bad, but it's still.
So let me ask a question. Yeah. I haven't seen it. I don't really intend to see it. I'm still sure. trying to burn the original from my brain. I don't mean to be that dismissive about it, but nostalgia is a thing that they're just super cashing in on these sure. days. You know, almost everything that once was is coming back.
We've yeah.
had Pee-wee Herman on Netflix. The X-Files came back. I was unapologetically a fan of the X-Files show, sure. and I watched the new show through the lens of nostalgia.
Sure.
To be fair, a lot of it wasn't very good. But when it hit the right notes, part of the fun was just seeing them back together again, seeing, you know, Mulder and Scully back together. I can't say, though, that really there was one or two episodes. There's an episode called Mulder and Scully Meet the Were-Monster that was a right. great sort of episode that sort of transcended the rest of it. But I'd say none of the rest of that show ever really captured the same level of entertainment or investment that I had when it was on originally. Fuller House, clearly people are only going to be watching it for nostalgia. At any point, is it as entertaining as what people remember initially, or even better? I mean, I don't have a gauge yeah. for that, but I think that'd be a good question if people haven't watched it or
sure.
thinking about
I mean,
it.
I think part of what engaged me as a young child with Full House is that it did talk about issues that were going on at the time. I mean, you know, there were some episodes where DJ was dealing with her weight. You know, and
how hard it is to write a jingle, and you know,
yeah. Well, you know, I mean, hey, we just rip them off. So yeah,
right. They're very, very true.
But you know, it did deal with some more life and family issues. It was more family centered. I will say that at least for Full House, it seemed like the kids were able to pass a lot more over on the adults, and so you see a lot more of this kind of dumbing down of adults and parents.
Oh, I think, Fuller House?
No,
Full
House.
Oh, the original. Okay, yeah.
I think Fuller House does a better job of establishing, I'm the parent, you're the kid. If you're going to get something by on me, it's not going to be for very long. And there are some moments in there that kind of tug at the heartstrings in terms of, you know, what's going on. I'm not going to say that they're, you know, Shakespeareanly acted or anything like that, but they do kind of pull at the heartstrings, and it's like you do feel sympathy for the characters, and you can appreciate what's going on in this situation.
So is nostalgia, you think it or cash in
I
on
think,
nostalgia?
I think it did. Succeeds. Yeah, okay. I think it did. I think season two, they're filming season two now. I hope it does a better job at doing it because I think that while they downplayed a lot of the old jokes and a lot of the old characters as the episodes went on, there was still a lot in there. And so I hope in season two they decide to do something better with it.
Well, I had read recently that, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis is coming on. So I think, you know, definitely there's big things. No, guys, I just made that up.
Psych!
Yeah.
And the last one I'm going to mention is Girl Meets World. And I'll say for a show that is
– can I just turn this mic off?
Yeah. I won't say anything right now. For a show that is, again, a spinoff of the original, I like this one. Full House, it's nostalgia. It's cool. It's fun to go back and relive some of that. This show on its own, I would say, does a good job at matching the quality that was Boy Meets World. The two girls that play the two best friends. When I say that, you got to understand there are a lot of similarities. Two girls are two best friends. One comes from a, you know, good stable home. The other one comes from a broken home. But even that, they treat and develop differently than they did in Boy Meets World. to me, one of the things that's great in this is, again, the adults are the adults. The kids are the kids. The adults are smarter than the kids. The adults are smarter than the kids in such a way that while they're trying to teach them these life lessons, they're willing to sit back and watch and let them crash and burn to figure some of these things out, which we don't see in television. Either the kids are so brilliant that they're, you know, teaching the parents how to live life, or, you know, the parents are there guiding them every step of the way, holding their hand, where you see in Girl Meets World a lot more willingness to say, this is your life and you need to learn how to live it. You need to learn how to explore some of these things. And we're always going to be here for you, but there are times you're going to crash and burn, and you need to know that, and you need to learn from that.
It seems like Disney has built a whole stable of those sorts of shows right now, I think, right? Like, that are similar. I turn them on. I can't tell one from the other. Like, if the TV show or the station will be on because my kids are watching Mickey Mouse Club, and I turn it on at night, and I saw Ben Savage, and I was like, oh, I guess this is, you know, like Boy Meets World. But it seems like Disney has cornered the TV station.
Yes.
It's kind of cornered the market on that sort of thing of preteen shows, I guess you would say. Like, they're right on the cusp of adolescence. Well, and do they all have laugh tracks? That's the question. Does Fuller House have a laugh track?
Fuller House does have a laugh track.
Okay.
Girl Meets World has a laugh track.
I feel like it would feel naked without a laugh track.
Yeah, and I can appreciate that. You know, I mean, it's not going to void out some of those things. But what's interesting in Girl Meets World, there are two seasons on Netflix, is in season two, you see a real development of the characters, but you can also see a development of the actors who are portraying these characters, which I've enjoyed. I really enjoyed the buildup of season one. You know, if anything, that was kind of a nostalgia throwback. Oh, this is fun. Season two does a really good job at bringing in issues and bringing in problems. One of my favorite episodes from season two is a bullying episode. And the way they handle that and deal with that, the actors portraying these characters do a great job at really showing how devastating bullying can be on this level. It's not like somebody's making fun of this person. And, you know, sometimes I feel like in the news today we hear, oh, this person called this person a name. Oh, you're being bullied. No. The main character is actually being threatened physically. This is a real case of bullying going on. But even then, the parents are sensitive enough to what's going on to stay close enough to say, hey, we're here for you if you want to talk about anything, because the main character hasn't told them what's going on. So we're here if you need to talk to us and tell us anything. But also, you know, they're looking at it saying, we know that there are issues you have to deal with on your own. And they're trusting that the friends that they've cultivated and developed are going to be there and help them through this process.
I will say this on the one or two bits of the show that I've seen that I noticed. I when Boy Meets World came on, I was also just a little bit older, where it wasn't like really a target show for me.
Sure.
So I saw it on television. But I would say that the little bits I've caught of Girl Meets World, and maybe not enough to know that, but it seems like they have moved away. I know Boy Meets World really depended on a lot of those really bad, cheesy stereotypes of like the nerd kid, you know, stuff that was really, to be perfectly honest, is the kind of hurtful stuff that like you take and you lay onto a real situation. You know, you start calling people the nerd characters from Boy Meets World or something. That's not going to be fun. It seems like they've moved, like those have, instead of being per se stereotypes, have now are attributes or character attributes that are built in. So a character is a real, I won't say a real person, but they are a little bit more of a person, where their distinctive thing is like not like Steve Urkel. He has suspenders and like you know Velcro glasses or something.
Well, and that's one of those things too that you see developing, because you have a younger version of this one character, Farkle, who is,
his name is Farkle.
Yeah.
Never mind, I take back everything I said.
You see in that. Even he develops. So he starts off when he's younger in season one as the nerdy kid. And in season two, he begins exploring his character and identity. So he's the intelligent one, but he's not a nerd anymore. which I liked and appreciated. So now we come to it.
Yeah, the new Disney show Preacher.
Yeah.
Right? It's a little bit of a departure from what they normally do.
Dude, that was perfect. Preacher. So
Mickey Mouse approved.
That's right. Ears and all. Nathan, just want to hear your initial thoughts on it.
Let me take the first plunge.
That's right. Because I'm just going to hide behind you.
Someone a few weeks ago, as we were starting the podcast, and I still don't know if this individual was joking or sincere when they said, "Are you going to review AMC's Preacher?" And of course, coming from a spinoff of These Go to 11, which is like a reform podcast, you know, what can we say about a show that is based off a comic book whose creator literally just said, "It's blasphemy." You know, it basically is blasphemy. I remember the comic book. It was a Vertigo comic when I was younger, when I was a teen, kind of a rebellious Baptist youth, if you will, that picking it up and looking at it. And I will give credit. I should give credit out to my father who kind of came across this. I didn't hide it. It was just sitting there and looking at this book and being like, whoa, what is this? The story involves a character who is kind of possessed by this force that we don't know what it is. And it gives him an ability that is referred to in the storyline as the Word of God. And basically, we don't really even learn this in the TV show until the very last bit of the episode. Yeah. But he has an ability to basically, what he says becomes will, if you will. The person who hears it is compelled to follow out in a very literal way whatever he says. Mm-hmm. And he decides that he's going to use his power to track down God and hold him accountable for the things he's done. The comic book is very much like a Western. It creates a world that is very dark and very twisted and takes a lot of religious and mythological ideas and mashes them all together and takes plenty of pot shots, if you will, at religious concepts, a lot of times for just purely a shock value. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the things are shocking in this comic book had nothing even to do with religion, and God is sort of becomes, if this is a Western, God is the evil, secretly cowardly cattle baron up on the hill, you know, except he's in charge of the whole universe. So my dad, I remember talking to me about him being like, "Hey, what is this?" And, you know, but to his credit, it wasn't like, "Take this trash, throw it away." It was really a challenging of like, "What do you think about this? And what are your thoughts?" And the truth is that this comic book didn't make me rethink my faith, except to explore my faith and say, what do I really believe? And I come to find out that, no surprise, it had very little to do with what's in this book. But some of the angry tones that manifest in this book are more about the perceptions that I think secular people have about Christianity and Christians that are captured and mirrored in this story. So I think there is value to even being able to engage in some of this material sometimes. I wouldn't recommend the comic personally, but the TV series that AMC has done is a little bit different because obviously they weren't going to go full out and create a show that's going to alienate people of faith. But they're going to rib people of faith a little bit with this story. So I watched it really just out of curiosity to see, well, what is this going to be like? Because some of the people involved in it, the writer who also worked on Breaking Bad, which I thought was a really great show, was working on it. And I did like the Western elements of the show. So there's one of the few cases where I'm thinking if you could tone this down, you'd have a potentially compelling show. And I watched the first episode, which was an hour and a half. It aired. It's on AMC, probably on demand. They even may have put it on Amazon Prime. Someone told me it was there as well. Sometimes they do that as a promotion, you know, like have the first episodes available. Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who, you know, they're known for raunchy comedies like Superbad and This Is the End. They're the people who directed it, and it has some of that. It's definitely an AMC show with all the violence and kind of grittiness that implies. But in the first episode, and I'm not convinced yet that it's a show that I'm going to stick with, but I think that there's a compelling and interesting story that they're starting to tell. And even if this is what's reflected in this show so far is nothing that to me jumps out as pure blasphemy, you know, the way that was mentioned. And there's no clear direct anger per se towards God, but the world of Preacher is a very, again, dark, gritty, and broken world. And the character, Jesse Custer, who is the main character, has come out of a very dark past that we still don't quite know about and has embraced his father's calling, which was to be a preacher. But he's not really good at it, partly because it's an ill fit. He seems to be hiding behind it, hiding behind this concept of faith. And it's not so much faith that I can see in the show so far, that his own faith in God, but rather he's embracing something that he remembers of his father's. And he's hiding in it. And it's not a good fit for him. He's in a town where there's a lot of he's witnessing evil go on under his nose and doesn't know how to engage it, partly because he's running from his own dark past. Now, that's not to say that also the show involves vampires that just randomly show up and drop from the sky, in fact. That's one of the other main characters. You have Jesse Custer. You have a character named Cassidy, who is a vampire, unapologetically so. He's just a vampire. They don't even explain how or why. He's just there. You also have a character named Tulip who comes in, who is Jesse's ex, and she comes back to the town, and you can kind of sense that he's going to be drawn away. And then there's this force that is literally exploding people from various faiths. Who it'll come into a church. It starts in Africa and blows up a an African preacher right in front of his congregation. It does the same thing to a pastor at a priest at a satanic church. And then it
the thing that got me watching this is I get a text from Nathan, hey, have you seen the preacher yet? It's like, no, I haven't. I don't really know if I'm going to. And he says, well, you know, in case you decide to, Tom Cruise blows up in this movie or in this show. And I was like, okay, I'm watching it. that seals it right there. I'm watching it.
To be fair, he doesn't actually explode on screen, but we see it a TV screen thing that with the Church of Scientology, Tom Cruise exploded today.
Yes. It's interesting because you talked about the show being blasphemous.
Rather, it was billed that way. You know, you see a lot of the reviews refer to it as being a edgy show in regards to religion.
Right. And I don't know. I'll say for myself, I've come to re-understand and redefine my terms when using blasphemy.
Which I think is a great point, and a point that, you know, I think that what we see, blasphemy is a hit word on the internet. It's just a thing to get hits. And I don't think that people who are calling for the heads of these various shows, like the I don't want to name names or throw anybody out there, but I agree that blasphemy is thrown around without any real understanding of what it means.
Yeah. I mean, I will say it is a show that is written and directed by people who are not believers. And so they're clearly getting and misunderstanding what it is to be a Christian. But at the same time, I will say it's very interesting because I'm compelled by the Jesse character because he's not a squeaky clean preacher. He's a person who has issues and faults. And to me, that would be a compelling story as a preacher who is real, as opposed to these almost extremes that we tend to see in television.
And I thought the most compelling, like the show has violence and humor, it has supernatural elements. Sure. Some of the crazier scenes are really entertaining to watch. I will say this, some of the action scenes have a real sort of, when I say brutality, I'm not even talking about the violence we see on screen, but they have the kind of charge that you'd almost see in a bigger budget show. Yeah. Like there's a scene where his girlfriend is fighting this guy in a car and it's zooming through a cornfield, and they're just intense.
Yeah.
When there's a scene where Jesse fights a bunch of of Confederate reenactors or whatever in like a bar, and these action scenes have some real kind of crunch to them.
Yes.
But at the same time, I think the thing that kind of emanates through this is that the Jesse character, at least so far as he's presented, really wants to hear from God. Now, whether he will or not on the show may be the crux of how this story develops.
Right.
But he has a desire. And what I see in the show so far is not this storyline so much about a world where an angry God is in charge, but a show where God seems to be absent completely, at least as far as these characters are concerned. They want to hear the voice of God. There was a character in the comics who has a name I'm not even going to mention here on the air, whose primary feature is that his face was distorted in sort of a weird puckered hole in the middle of his mouth. So you can imagine the name he might have. But he shows up in the and he was always a kind of character. He was the only truly noble character, I believe, in the comics, but he was also a character that was the butt of a lot of really of the writer's own, like, really dark jokes. And so when this character shows up in the show, I totally expected Seth Rogen to kind of throw him under the bus and make him a completely kind of grotesque.
Right.
And yet, the scene where Jesse goes to visit him, a young man who, it were implied, has tried to take his life and has resulted in a disfigurement of his face, a character named Eugene, when he meets him, I think that's just about the most, like, gentle, sympathetic, and maybe most provoking thing in the whole show.
I agree. I was surprised by that moment, and I was really, it was compelling, because despite the preacher's doubts, you see, or maybe I should say, through the preacher's doubts of God, his compassion is coming through to this young man. And we're able to see that gentleness and tenderness coming through, you know. And there's a line in there where, you know, the guy says, "Yeah, I don't know if I should go to church, you know, for various reasons, and I really want to though." And he says, "If you want to go to church, you should go to church." And just that very tender, almost pastoral moment.
And
coming
what
through.
The character said, which is interesting, because I think that that's an element of it, that he wants to be. It's almost an encapsulation of what happens at the end of Pulp Fiction, when the Samuel L. Jackson character is talking about giving up this life of crime to be a sort of protector of the flock.
Right.
If you get the Jesse Custer character, he seems to be the guy, he's the Samuel L. Jackson character on the other side of things, who isn't finding that solace that he expected to find in it. And the next thing that Eugene says is, you know, God used to talk to me, and now after I've done this, he's angry. He doesn't talk to me. And the reflection that you see on Jesse's face is interesting, because it almost implies that he's surprised to hear that God ever spoke to Eugene, because it's almost implied that he's never heard him himself.
Yeah.
And so this hole that's there is something I expect to be explored for better or worse, but I think it does open up an interesting and thought-provoking conversation. And the show itself so far has some entertaining elements to it.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, again, is this a show that, you know, you'd sit down and watch with your younger children? No, not something I'm recommending. But you know what? If you have children who are maybe, you know, 16, 17, 18, and this would almost be a good piece to sit down and watch and discuss with them in light of what we see in culture today.
Right. And even if you're not suggesting, if it's something that they want to engage in, like, and I think that was the wisdom that my father showed, was not pushing away, but saying, okay, it's here.
Yeah.
You've got this. What do you think about it? And it was funny, because after that conversation, I realized, you know, in really thinking about it, that there wasn't much that this preacher comic really had to offer me, you know?
Sure.
But I was able to engage with it, and I think that was thoughtful. It was much different than just tearing it up and throwing it away, because what would that have accomplished?
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a show that I think has potential to be an interesting conversation piece, whether you like it or not. I'd say, you know, give it a shot.
Yeah.
If it's in your wheelhouse, so to speak. So
absolutely. So we're gonna go ahead and, you know, we're going to sign off this portion. Ladies and gentlemen, you just finished listening to Pop Culture Ninjas. Summer review, summer recap, just TV shows that we like that we're throwing out there to you as recommendations to watch and look at. But, you know, now we have our winners. So thank you guys so much for participating in this. This was awesome. This is huge. And again, this is for our benefit, but this is for your benefit as well, because the more reviews we can get, the more the higher we get on search engines, the higher we get when people go to look at, if they type in Pop Ninja Culture, if they type in entertainment, we just get higher up on the list, and so people can find us faster, and that makes our podcast more easily accessible. So we did have the 12 reviews. Like I said, we were going to wait till the end to look. The other two did not post, so guys, whoever those two reviews are, we want to apologize that those didn't get up there, but we can't see you, and so we can't make an announcement of your name.
But we'll keep you. I will keep them in running for next time.
Yeah, for future.
Yeah.
So we, you know.
So we. It's not in vain.
Yes. Yes. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to go ahead and random generate our winners here, and Nathan is going to go ahead and read the person who won your tag name, and then he's going to read your review. Don't forget to go ahead and, when you hear your name, make sure you email us popcultninjas popcultninja@gmail.com. Popcultninja@gmail.com. And then go ahead and let us know.
Email your address is also on Twitter and on Facebook.
Yes. So, so our first number that our random generator has generated is number 6.
Number 6. Oh, this is so rigged. Dutch dog. This is Greg, isn't it?
Are you serious?
It is indeed. I can't even read the full title. It says Pain Heals, Chicks Dig Scars, and something else. And he's, you know, could it get any better? Two dudes named Nathan talking movies, books, and beer. Christian perspective with an earthy realness. Yeah, I'm all in.
Nice. And what is it that Greg has won?
Absolutely nothing. Okay. Well, we have 5 prizes today. And the prize that we have up on deck is a Blu-ray of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which is a movie from a few years back. We were talking about Mark Strong a few weeks ago, and I thought it would be great to throw this movie in. We mentioned it. It's a spy thriller done in a very realistic way. This is not James Bond. This is a bunch of guys in the 60s sitting down in dark, drab rooms, but it's a really complex and intertwining film. So, Greg, I hope you enjoy it.
All right. Our next random number is number 4.
Number 4. This is S. Leary 79. It says, great start. This podcast is giving the listeners what they have been wanting for, a great podcast which looks at culture through a biblical lens. It's great to hear about upcoming films and shows without the spoilers. These guys help me geek out in media and film. Love it. S. Leary, thank you so much for the kind words and comments. And you just got a copy of Justified Season 2 on Blu-ray. That's a show that I didn't mention when we were talking about shows, but what a great show. Great modern Western. Timothy Oliphant is the main character. Again, this is Season 2 Blu-ray. I believe the show is also available on Amazon Prime. Encourage all of you to check it out. But yeah, you just got a copy of Justified. Super underrated show, which I think is done now, so the whole story is out there to see.
Excellent. Congratulations. Next number, number 10.
Number 10. Spoiler alert! No spoilers. By somebody named Paul Tripp's mustache.
Nice.
As a father of 4 young kids displaced by the military away from my family, I don't get to see movies the weekend that they release, almost never. I love being able to hear others talk about the movies and get me psyched up for them without the whole story being ruined. Keep up the good work, fellas. Well, Paul Tripp's mustache, or PTM, as I will call you from now on. Thank you so much again for the comment. You just got a copy of the X-Men Essential Trade Paperback. Same kind of deal that we gave away last week with Captain America. This is a comic collection of stories related to the X-Men. We did not review X-Men this week. We reviewed it last week. It's coming out, X-Men Apocalypse, coming out this week. But you can go back and check out our podcast, talks about X-Men, and we thought it would be cool to give away a comic that covers some of those classic stories. So we will get that out to you soon, PTM.
Congratulations, man. Our next number is number 11. Do we already do number 11?
No, I don't believe so. No. What you don't know about the Something Something by Reverend Revenge.
All right. Speaking of the preacher.
There you go. Have you ever had to sneeze so bad that your whole body tenses in anticipation? That's what it's like every time I have to wait for the next PCN episode. That's going to be a blurb on our website.
Boom.
Every movie review is intelligent and engaging, and so far everything that you've recommended has been perfect. You can't get better than that. You need to listen to this podcast. As an added bonus, you get to hear Greg Dutcher on some episodes, and even the this is Greg again, and even the infamous Reverend James King shows up from time to time. Don't waste your life. Listen to this stupid podcast. Okay, Reverend Revenge. Based on all that, you just got a copy of the original Japanese Godzilla.
Yes.
Gojira. It's a kind of collector's edition DVD. Really cool to go back and check out that old movie, which I still think is one of the better giant monster movies. So we will get that out to you again. Contact us through the email, and we'll get it to you. Very do we have cool. Is that it, or do we have one more?
I think we have one more.
Okay.
Our last runner is going to be number 1.
Number 1. Great and entertaining podcast by K Blazer 7. I commute over 3 hours to work. You already have my sympathy. Yours, along with other podcasts, really help time to fly. Helps to keep my mind off the traffic and on fantastic entertainment. Thanks to keep up the great work, keeping us in the know. And that's awesome, because that's one of the reasons I listen to podcasts on the way to work. I don't, thankfully, have that kind of commute. But it's awesome to hear that. Cave Blazer, you just got a copy of Supernatural Season 5 on DVD. We talked about Preacher, and we talked about the comic. And one of the shows that I think kind of sprang from that was the show Supernatural, which kind of combines elements of Buffy and elements of dark fantasy into a show that I found pretty entertaining. See, we just ended, I think, Season 10 or 11. This goes back to Season 5, where the apocalypse occurs. So, cool show. And check it out, and we'll get that out to you as soon as you get back to us. So again, thanks everyone for the reviews. If you're listening to the show, please, you know, leave us a review, giving us your feedback, honest feedback. We're not looking for all 5-star. Well, it'd be nice to have all 5-star reviews, but what we want are honest reviews that reflect what you really think about what we're doing here. So again, thank you to all. You contact us, and we will get the prizes out to you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys. Have a great evening.
Take care.
Really shook the pillars of heaven, didn't we, Wang?